Welcome, everyone. This is Gina LaRoche from Seven Stones Leadership Group. Welcome to our community call. I have a lot of you on mute because we had a lot of background noise as people were coming on the line. And so I will keep you on mute for a few minutes, and then I'll welcome you and explain Maestro, and then we'll get started. With us today, we have a really special guest. Her name is Roberta Oster-Sachs. She's an Emmy Award-winning journalist. She's a leadership trainer and educator. And I've invited her here today really to reflect on her commitments to bring powerful communication and presence through mindfulness to her work and her community. She is committed to having us all know our stories and share our stories. And we thought we would have a conversation with the two of us and with all of you about how do we bring practices of sufficiency, of mindfulness, of joy, of longing into our day-to-day lives. So welcome, Roberta.
Thank you, Gina. I'm delighted to be here.
For those of you who have never been on one of our community calls before, although I see a lot of familiar names up on the screen, so welcome, welcome. We are on a conference line called Maestro, and we can interact with you, and you can raise your hand. And to raise your hand, you just click on any key from 1 to 5, and that raises your hand, and I can call on you. Also, if there's a lot of background noise, I can put you on mute, which most of you are on mute right now. So if you're talking, I cannot hear you. And after people, every time someone was calling into the line, there was a lot of static. So once the folks stop calling in, I will take you all off mute. So Roberta and I, and I think everyone I see on the board is familiar with Seven Stones Leadership Group, but I'll just say that I'm one of the co-founders with Jennifer Cohen. We are a consulting and leadership, consulting and coaching organization really founded to help others discern who they are as leaders and bring a powerful commitment of joy, love, community into our leadership practice. We base all of our work on these distinctions of sufficiency and enough. And Roberta and I met at the Mindful Leadership Summit in Washington, D.C. last November, and it was their first ever summit, and they are going to have a second one this November, and I would encourage you all to consider attending it. And Roberta came up to me after a talk I gave, and she will say she invited herself to lunch, but I think I invited her to lunch. And we got to sit down and really talk about the power of mindfulness and how it ties into with our work here at Seven Stones. And suffice to say, it was love at first sight, and we've been hanging out ever since. We designed the call today really, you know, to be interactive. I have a series of questions here that I have. If you all have questions for her or for me, really about how to rediscover our enoughness and bringing our promises and practices of sufficiency into our lives. And as many of you know, this is our first community call of the year, and so we are so glad to have you all back. For those of you who've worked with me before, you know that a notepad or journal next to your side might be beneficial because I will most likely ask you some questions. And don't be shy. We like people to share and reflect their thoughts by either speaking up or raising your hand, and I will let you know when I take you off mute. So that's our design for the conversation today. Before we dive in, does anyone have any questions? Okay. I've taken you all off of mute. So if you are someplace that you know is loud, you may want to put mute on for yourself. And if I start to hear background noise, I'll put you back on mute and let you know. So, Roberta, thank you.
Hi, Gina.
Hi.
Thank you for your gracious introduction. And it was love at first sight, but it was your talk to the community at that conference that completely pulled me in, and your concept of sufficiency and abundance.
Hello. Can you put
was,
sorry about that. I muted that person.
Okay. Your framing of sufficiency in terms of scarcity and abundance struck me as one of the most, it just resonated tremendously in all the leadership work I've been doing and the experts I've been meeting. For me, you and Jen in your work just framed it in such a beautiful way that resonated. So I am honored to be in your orbit and on your team.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So, Roberta, why don't you start off, because this is your first community call with us, and I would love for you to share a little bit about your career and really what had you arrive at the Mindful Leadership Summit last November. What called you to that conversation?
Well, I'll give you the short version. My career path has always been in journalism. So ever since I was a kid, I always enjoyed writing and telling people stories and meeting new people. So after college, I worked my way up in network news and really had the gift of spending 20 years as a producer in documentaries and news magazines at NBC Dateline and at CBS at a show called Street Stories with Ed Bradley and at ABC. So for 20 years, I got paid to travel around the world with a camera crew and an incredibly talented team and listen and try to gain people's trust to tell their stories, to share them with our viewers. And my mission was to be the voice of the underdog, to focus on human rights and education and social justice issues. And sometimes I was successful at getting the bosses to agree to let me do things like cover the Taliban and women, you know, abuse of women. Other times I was sent to more glamorous stories that got higher ratings. But that journey ended for me with 9/11. And not to send chills up anyone's spine, but I'm sure many people on the call have a connection to that tragedy. And mine was that I was working for Tom Brokaw at NBC when the plane hit, and covered that story for Dateline, and had a new baby, my first baby, and a new husband and a new life in New York. And after all of my years of begging to go to the danger zones, I suddenly, after about a month of covering firemen's funerals and interviewing survivors and doctors and experts and anthrax experts and such, and recognizing that I had a tragedy in my own hometown and my child's life was at risk, that was my mindfulness epiphany. That's when I really realized that I needed to move in a different direction. And I quit my fancy job at 30 Rockefeller Plaza and my career, my 3-year contract, and moved with my husband to Boston and went back to graduate school and studied public policy at the Kennedy School and just fell in love with the study of leadership. So all of this has dovetailed to a career where I now teach leadership development and mindfulness. In the past 5 years has begun to very gently creep into all of my work because it has changed my life, and I want to bring it to my clients and the people in the classrooms that I have the privilege of facilitating.
So, Roberta, you talk about, as a journalist, having to listen deeply and to cultivate the voice, maybe the voice of the voiceless or the voice of the oppressed. And you've talked about how you are captivated by leadership in your mindfulness practice. And I'm just curious how you've woven all that together into the work you're doing today.
Well, I will share with you that it is a work in progress. And I think what's exciting is that the field of leadership development is now embracing these ancient traditions of meditation, of yoga, of mindful listening, of spirituality, of looking inward and looking for gratitude and looking for abundance and all the values that come with a mindfulness practice. So when I first started in this field, many people would roll their eyes, especially my colleagues at Harvard. And now, of course, they are writing articles in the cover of Time magazine about how mindfulness can change your life. So I think we've seen a dramatic seismic shift in the past 5 or 6 years in acceptance of these tools. So for me, I am over the moon because now I can go to companies and I'm now affiliated with a wonderful international organization called the Potential Project, whose mission is corporate-based mindfulness training. And they've been all over Europe and Asia and the Netherlands for the past 7 years teaching mindfulness practices in huge Fortune 500 companies like Google and American Express and Accenture. And they are now bringing that to the U.S. Not surprisingly, Gina, the U.S. is the last place. We're the least progressive on that map. But
yeah.
Anyway, I am now a member of that team, and as part of my in my basket of tools, I am going to be teaching some classes with their model. And I'm very excited about it. I really feel blessed that these doors are opening.
So, Roberta, as many of our clients know, we use mindfulness as a foundation for our coaching work and our sufficiency practice work. What brought you to mindfulness, and are you willing to share a little bit about your own day-to-day mindfulness practice?
Yes. What brought me to mindfulness after my kind of recovery from my life of 20 years of insanity in journalism was yoga. I started taking yoga classes and started going on retreats and reading about these practices, a little bit about Buddhism, and beginning to understand the historical precedents. And I would say that the biggest shift for me was a year ago. I spent 6 months in India. My husband was doing a Fulbright fellowship, and I had the opportunity to study at a yoga institute.
Oh, shit.
So I studied integral yoga and also mindfulness with an Indian leader in a beautiful, beautiful group of 20 people in this class. And that was a kind of mind-blowing six-month experience. And we practiced every day, 3 or 4 hours a day, and we practiced every weekend. And Akshar, who was our master, would read from the Bhagavad Gita and teach us slokas in Sanskrit, and we would sing with him, and then he would translate them, and we'd talk about them. So that took me way into some deep work. And then when I came home, I met you and Jen and the work, and I was fortunate to attend your workshop a month ago, and I see how you're bringing this to your clients, and I'm just totally inspired. And it helps me, I'll be honest. All right, this is a community call, and I will say that I've always been a spinning top, a type A, overachieving, nonstop, whirling dervish. And so nothing could really stop me. The only thing that has helped to slow me down is to learn to pause, to breathe. And my personal practice is at least 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes in the evening of a simple sitting practice of breathing. So that's my practice, and when I have time to go on retreat or get away and really have a longer practice, I do that. But in general, a minimum of 5 minutes if I'm having a crazy day, and I really try to do half an hour a day each day.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to ask you, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you, Gina, because you've
yeah.
been practicing for a decade longer than I have. May I ask about your practice?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not sure if I've practiced a decade longer than you, but what I will say is I did when specifically mindfulness practice. I lived in Cambridge, Mass for most of my adult life, and in a typical Canterburgian moment, I was taught to meditate by my Unitarian minister.
Great.
And I, you know, and I think my children were quite young, and I do remember one of my children was. You know, he needed a little extra mama care, and I used to have him sit in front of a candle and watch the candle in silence. And then when he could no longer sit in front of the candle, he could blow it out. And, you know, he'd last. He was like 3 or 4 years old. He'd last a few minutes.
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah, it was good. I would sit with him. And I would have on and off periods where I would sit, but rarely alone. It was like I would go to an event or I'd go. It didn't quite occur to me to have a daily practice. And then,
mm-hmm.
quite frankly, it wasn't until I went on a silent meditation retreat
mm-hmm.
at the Insight Meditation Society in Barre, Massachusetts, that I really awoke to the power of practice, the power of
mm-hmm.
mindfulness and meditation. And then since that, and that was in, that was 5 years ago, that retreat. And since then, I have sat meditation virtually daily, and I am one of the leaders at New Haven Insight here in Connecticut, where I live, I sit once a day, but I am also shooting for twice a day, and
mm-hmm.
Again, I, you know, depending on the day of the week, I sit anywhere between 20 and 90 minutes a day, because if
wow.
I on a Thursday, our sit's 45 minutes in the evening. So if I sit a half hour at home, you know, you get the gist. But that's my
yep.
that's my mindfulness practice. I also do a lot of breath work, a lot of
mm-hmm.
Transition work. If I get up from my desk, get in the car, breathe two or three breaths mindfully. Really
uh-huh.
try, if I'm cooking or about to eat, pause as I'm eating, really notice that I'm eating as I'm packing up to get in and out of my office, noticing I'm packing up.
Uh-huh.
I think it'll be interesting to hear other people. I think this question has me pause to see where I'm not mindful, the moments I'm not mindful, and it's when I'm doing email.
Uh-huh.
A lot of times when I'm driving, I notice I'm like, oh, I don't remember driving past XYZ or emails. I'll just, time will fly by and I have no consciousness of the time
uh-huh.
flying by. So I'm just banging out email. So thanks for that question.
Thank you.
Before we move into a second series of questions I have for Roberta, does anyone have any questions or comments or thoughts about, you know, what brings you to these conversations, what brings you to sufficiency, what brings you to mindfulness, or what would you like to create for yourself? Maybe you haven't found your way to a mindfulness practice or a sufficiency practice and you have questions about that. And you can raise your hand by either hitting the keypad, or you can just start talking. Most of you are off mute, but some of you are on mute. Okay, well, Roberta, we'll continue.
I have a question.
Marilyn, hi.
Yeah, hey, thanks for the call. Yeah, I'm finding, I'd love to get feedback on kind of a spiritual journey question around sufficiency. I'm finding as I'm newly dealing with the perimenopausal hormones, that I'm going through some, what seems to be just an opening to my deeper level of self-judgment, which, you know, I'm trying to hold the framing that that's a beautiful, wonderful gift, and that, you know, I'm getting to deeper levels so that I can clear and release that. But when I'm in there, it doesn't feel like that. Do you, you know, can you speak to that at all?
So, Marilyn, you were a little scratchy, but did I hear you are, as you go deeper and deeper into your practice, you're noticing more and more your self-judgment and your judging mind?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then what was your question?
Well, just sort of like that seems to sometimes take me to some dark places. And I guess I'm actually just looking for reassurance that that's kind of how it looks. You know, that as you do open more to the truth, you know, that you get present to the darkness so you can bring it to the light.
Thank you, Marilyn. I have a thought. Roberta, do you want to?
Well, Marilyn, I just want to, one thought would just be for us to just also remember that hormonal changes, and I can certainly relate to what you're going through, also require a tremendous sense of humor because our bodies are whacked out. And so, you know, it was sort of like I found I was like back to being an adolescent again for about 2 years. So I would be crying when I was happy and laughing when I was sad. And so the self-judgment just fit right in there. So I might offer to you that part of it may really literally be just your body readjusting, and when you come through that process, it is totally liberating, because I found a much more stable, balanced emotional state. But in the, you know, at the perimenopausal time frame, and Christian Northrup writes a lot about this, these changes. Do you have her book? My mother.
You know, I know, but I heard they recommended, so I need to get that.
My mother sent me, when I hit, you know, my late 40s, she sent me this wonderful book, Menopausal Wisdom, I think, from Christian Dr. Northrup, and it has been my Bible. And so I would steer you in that direction, but also in terms of the dark places and looking for the light. When I was studying in India, they talked a lot about that. And a lot of the ashrams have a tiny, tiny pinhole hole in the top of a dome that allows have you been there or seen pictures of this sharp ray of light will come right down into the middle of a huge dome and like light up a crystal?
Yeah.
And it's this metaphor for how in the darkness, even just a tiny, tiny drop of light can completely transform the darkness.
Beautiful.
So, yeah, so that's what resonates for me when you describe that. I would just say hold on to the light, look to the light, get out in the light, get out in the sunshine, and don't be hard on yourself.
Yeah, thank you. The reassurance just helps a lot. And I live in Texas, so there is a lot of sunshine. That should be easy.
That's good, yeah. It's very healing, yeah.
Gina,
what do you think? Yeah.
Yeah, I was beautiful. I was just going to say, and I'll just, a tiny footnote, you're not alone. It's quite common. I joke with people because once you start down this journey, there's really no turning back. And sometimes you wish you had taken the other pill, so to speak, from the major reference.
Marilyn, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you. Nice to hear your voice.
Yeah.
Hey, Alex, you have your hand up.
Oh, hey, yeah. So with the interest of full disclosure, I'm Roberta's sister.
Oh, great. Welcome.
And, my fabulous sister.
Thank you. So I have a question. I would just love to hear more about the sufficiency process that you're describing. Could you say a little more about that?
Sure. So, Alex, I was introduced to this conversation for sufficiency by a man named Les Traban, who was a colleague and friend of Lynn Twist. And Lynn Twist is a philanthropist and author and amazing human being, if you have a chance to meet her, that wrote a book called The Soul of Money, and which really started, really for me, it was Les Traban started me on this journey with this inquiry about what is sufficiency. And he talked about our lives and our world as, the phrase he said to me was, you're swimming in a sea of scarcity, and you don't even know it. And I was captivated by the thought of that because I simultaneously disbelieved him and believed him at the same time. And really that comment and his question really started me on this journey to what is sufficiency, what is enough, what is what we're now calling sustainable abundance. Like, how can I... you know, in a world, in a culture in the United States where more is better, and greed is good and growth is good, every single organization that that Roberta and I have walked into, who are in the traditional paradigm, if you say what is your goals for the future of this organization, it's always growth, and growth is the only, quote unquote, the only way anything can ever happen. And really this discernment for me, I mean, it's been many, many years, really has me look at what is my impact on the planet, what is my commitment to the larger world, how can we bring this concept of enoughness to all beings. And that's looking at sufficiency and scarcity, looking at being responsible for our finances. Les Traban used to say, if you're not talking about money, you're not talking about sufficiency. How do we, some of the blog posts, one time I posted a blog about paying our taxes and how we get to pay our taxes. And it's not, given the structure of this country where we all live in, we, on April 15th, pay to our government to run. And I could have a lot of conversations about my feelings about that. And if I'm standing in sufficiency, I gladly pay my taxes. And believe me, I have a lot of noise about paying my taxes, and I do take that stand. So, Alex, what I'll say is I would encourage you to really look at our website and our blogs. There's a lot of conversation for sufficiency, and some of these folks on the call could also chime in because they were there at the very beginning. I see some of my early cohorts are on the call here that could talk a lot about sufficiency. But for me, it really is a way of life and a journey and a place to stand, as well as, you know, there are, don't get me wrong, I know there are structural scarcities. There are people today who are not going to eat. There are people today who don't have plumbing and water and electricity. And there are species today that are getting wiped out by atmospheric changes in the planet. And so I'm not asleep to that. But I look for where I can stand from this place of sufficiency.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions before I... No? Okay. So, Roberta, one of the questions I've been dying to ask you about is, when we talk, you often talk about how important story is, how your and your commitment to work with people to get their story out. And so I guess I have a series of questions in that line about What are the stories that have your attention today, and what stories are you sharing about yourself, and really, why is it important for us to share our stories?
Well, maybe I'll start with your last question and why I think it's important, because it provides an emotional connection, because we are our stories. That's really the soul of who we are. And so I think the more we allow ourselves to practice mindfulness and open up our creative spirit and share those stories and follow our hearts, I think we will be better leaders, better parents, better friends, and we are also can be changed by these stories. So that's working backward into your question. I think that it's for me, storytelling and listening to people's stories is the key to being a great leader. And, you know, in my day-to-day work, I am teaching leadership. And the best leaders I know are the ones who will take the time at the water cooler to ask how your grandmother's 80th birthday party was, and they will look you in the eye, and they will care. And you'll know they care by their body language and by their – you'll just know if they're authentic or not. So a story that's on my mind this morning that frankly had me in tears is the passing of B.B. King, which I'm sure most of us have heard about already, but he was 89 years old, and he had severe diabetes, and he passed away yesterday peacefully at home with hospice. And I had the great fortune in 1993 to interview B.B. King. I spent a week on the road with B.B. King and his band, traveling on a road show in Florida for a piece for a show called Street Stories with Ed Bradley, which was a sidekick of 60 Minutes. So before Ed Bradley showed up, I was alone for a week with B.B. and 21, trumpets and drum players and valets and drivers and box carriers and his whole gang. And I got to hang out with him in his bus, which he called his home on wheels. And I learned so much about B.B. King, from B.B. King, about stories. Because he uses, so first of all, for him, as you know, his music, he tells us the blues, right? And he talks about the pain and the rising above oppression that he survived as a child growing up in Indianola, Mississippi, not an easy place for an orphan. By the age of 9 years old, he was an orphan and living alone in a shack on a plantation. And so, but B.B. found music. B.B. found this guitar. B.B. ordered his music. He learned how to play music from a catalog he ordered from Sears Roebuck. You know, he taught himself. And this became his voice. And his idea was that his music would lift him out of the blues and share his stories and bring community together, whether it was in a tumble-down shack in Indianola or later on, you know, in Carnegie Hall. And so I really got a chance to observe someone who lives mindfulness every day in some ways. He's not a mindful eater. He loved his sugar and had diabetes and was terrible, and I was giving him a hard time all the time about all those pecan pies and such. You know, he was not mindful about everything, but B.B. King knew how to make people feel valued. You know, whether it was we were checking into a hotel, the clerk at the hotel, or Ed Bradley, they were all treated with dignity. And he wanted to hear their stories. And what really struck me about B.B. King is if you watch him play guitar, B.B. King does not sing when Lucille, his guitar, is speaking. So interesting, you don't even notice it as a listener, but if you go back now and listen to him, he'll do his riff, and then he'll sing. Then his voice. But he's like, I don't want to interrupt Lucille. She is speaking. So he was practicing mindfulness, and he probably certainly didn't call it that, but he had a spirituality, and he's gone. And I, you know, it's, you know, he said in the interview, we asked him, you know, Bibi, you're 67 years old, you're on the road 320 days a year. Are you going to ever retire? And he looked at Ed Bradley, and he put his hands together in prayer position, and he looked up at the sky, and he said, only when the good one says, the great one says, that's enough. And so this morning, or last night, the great one said, that's enough. So that's the story that's with me today, and I'm very, you know, I'm sad to lose him. You guys can, if you want to watch this piece, we did a 12-minute profile of him that aired on CBS. It's on my website, which Gina can send you later. I loved him. I loved him. I loved B.B. King, and he's gone. So I'm thinking about the passing of all these great leaders of the music and civil rights era who were losing every day, and their legacy. And
so, thank you, Roberta. It had me wonder. I was thinking maybe we'd pause for a moment, and for those of you listening, to get out your journal or pad of paper, and really, what are the stories that you're telling? What's the stories you're telling, either yourself or out loud, about yourself? And I'm gonna read a poem that just came to me while you were talking, Roberta, so I think I'll read
okay.
it, and then we'll open it up and see if people are willing to share some of the stories that they're telling. Who's this, Pat? Hold on. Okay. Tell Me, She Said, by Sally Atkins. Tell me, she said, what is the story you are telling? What is the wild song? What wild song is singing itself through you? Listen. In the silence between there is music. In the spaces between there is story. It is the song you are living now. It is the story of the place where you are. It contains the shapes of these old mountains, the green of the rhododendron leaves. It is happening right now in your breath. In your heart beats still, drumming the deeper rhythm beneath your cracking words. It matters what you did this morning and last Saturday night and last year. Not because you are important, but because you are in it and it is still moving. Sorry. Okay. And it is still moving. We are all in this story together. Listen, in the silence between there is music. In the spaces between there is story. Pay attention. We are listening each other into being.
Oh, my God. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Who's the poet?
Sally Atkins.
Gina, I didn't even... Can I use that in all of my classes? I will tell you, for me, in the silence between there is music, the spaces between there is story. That's exactly what I was saying, and that's exactly what B.B. King does in his music, with his music. That's beautiful.
I'm curious if anyone in the community be willing to notice the stories that you're telling. And I think the good thing about this conversation, and Jen and I will say this often, you can shift the stories that you are saying about yourself. So if you're unhappy with the stories you've written down, you have an opportunity to shift it. But I'm opening it up to see if who's willing to share what they saw for themselves.
Hi, this is Aurora.
Hi, Aurora.
Hi. Well, I tried to join your group 2 years ago, and it has been a very difficult time in my life. And I question about sufficiency, and I'm trying to make sense for what sufficiency is for me in this period of such a lack of resources, lack of confidence in myself, and so many other things. I stopped joining your calls because I started with panic attacks. And it took me several months to get out of it. And so when I hear you say you can change your story, I continue to wonder, you know, you hear so many different belief system from different people. And then I start questioning whether I have to stop and just relay on my own experience, because hearing all these belief systems is creating a lot of confusion for me. I don't believe in coincidence. I got your email about this call, and I say maybe I need to go back and see what I can learn and then put it in practice. I'm just curious to see how this evolves and what I hear, how it touches something in me that I will change my own story, because it hasn't been a happy story for the past 3 years, really.
Yeah. Aurora, thank you. Thank you for coming back, and thank you for sharing your experience. I know for me, I'll just jump in, Roberta, and then I'll let you comment. I know for me, Aurora, mapping, what I call mapping my own mind, is the equivalent to what I heard you say of, you know, kind of traveling your own journey. And I've done that, you know, mostly through meditation, but through other means. And so I just offer that for you. And then the other thing I do, and some of you who I've coached are going to chuckle right now, I have found a lot of nourishment and light. You know, we talked about the shimmer of light through making collages with images out of magazines, just cutting out images and gluing them to highlight my state, whether it's fear or anxiety or joy or the future or suffering or, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. And I've used that technique for many, many years. And so I just offer that both to you, and just so happy that you got the email and joined the call today. So thank you. Roberta, I know you want to jump in.
Aurora, thank you so much for sharing, because let's just tell you, we have all been there, and many of us on the call may even be there with you right now. That's kind of part of the journey, what I'm really learning is that it's the roller coaster that's like a little caterpillar. You're up, you're down, you're up, you're down. I used to think, oh, I'm going to get up, have the kids, have the husband, get the life, have the job, and I'm going to stay up. And that is not how it's been. I go down, I go up. And so what I am learning, a couple of tools. So first of all, you're not alone, Aurora, and it's we're all there. And we're with you, and we're supporting you. So I have three little practical thoughts that came to mind. One is girlfriends. If you have even one or two people who you can, or sisters or siblings or neighbors or people you can share your story with. And if you don't, if you have any kind of community in a in a practice or church or synagogue or a community group, I believe that there is strength and power in gathering together of a community. So I would first encourage community, because believe me, you're going to find out you're not alone, right? You with me? Aurora?
Yes, I am.
Okay. The second one is similar to Gina's, but it's a little different. It's something I learned from my sister Alex, which is a vision board that she created. She helped a group of women. We hung out together and created a vision board where we took just a big piece of paper like Gina was describing, but kind of a harder one that you get at the art store. And instead of instead of how we were feeling now and creating imagery about where we were at, we did a vision board of where we're heading, where we want to be. So, like, I'm looking at mine now, and I have, like, Oprah Winfrey climbing a ladder. It says 20 questions every woman should ask herself. Pause, 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 pause. Do yoga 4 times a week. She's got game. I've got the woman, Lupita, who won the Academy Award. I just have, like, this. And so whenever I'm feeling like you're feeling right now, I take a breath. I look at the vision board that I created with my sister, and I think, huh, that's where I'm headed. So I try to pull myself out of where I am now. And then my third suggestion is something that I teach in my leadership classes, which is to get a journal or a notebook or any kind of thing you like to write in and start making a list of your strengths. I teach this in a class for executives, like, you know, corporate executives. I call it your strengths catalog. And it's a list of all the things you're good at. It could be from, you know, small, you know, cooking to writing novels to teaching to whatever, your career, things that you love to do and you are good at. And then I invite you to hang that list up on your fridge, on your mirror in your bedroom, and in a place that you are going to see it. And when you, so have these little reminders around your house of your vision board, which is going to give you a positive view of where you want to go, and your strengths catalog of what you're good at. And that's my quick, you know, my quick, and remember, you're not alone. So that's, you know, as much as I can say on a short call like this, that's some ideas to ruminate on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Roberta. Dan, you have
pleasure.
Your hand up?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
My name is Dan Schaefer. I live in Monterey, and I'm an interspiritual minister and writer, and I wrote a book called The Power of I Am a number of years ago, and I teach on that subject. And I just wanted, when you asked a question about telling individual stories, the one that came to mind for me is that a number of years ago, being convicted that whatever you say after I am has the potential to become your reality, I realized that I was going around, when people asked me what I did, I would go around telling people I was a problem solver. Mm-hmm. And what happened was the universe kept bringing me problems. So I had to rethink that, you know. And as I rethought and reinvented that story, I decided that without changing what I actually did, I could say I'm a idea synthesizer. And when I did that, the universe starts bringing me ideas. Mm. So it was a real major shift in my approach to and how I felt about how my life was going and where I was headed and what my strength was, and conveyed a whole different idea to people around me without changing really anything about what I was doing. So sometimes I think that what we say we are, what we say after I am, is so important, and we just blindly throw those things out. Like, I'm broke. If you're broke, if you say you're broke, that's what the universe is going to give you. I think Lynn Twist has a lot of that. Money too. So,
well,
that's what I had to say.
Yeah, no, thank you, Dan. We often, you know, when we teach communication and language here at Seven Stones, we really talk about language generates our lives rather than purely just describing our lives. And I noticed I had a similar. I used to say, people say, "How are you?" I would say, "I am busy." And I've stopped saying I am busy because I just seem to be always busy. So, Dan, I really appreciate your comment. I think that's very powerful. Roberta, go ahead.
Well, Dan, my heart is breaking for you out there in Monterey. you're living in one of the most beautiful places on the planet. But I want to buy your book. I totally love what you said. I completely agree with you. And, you know, I believe in you know, what Shakti Gawain called 15 years ago, creative visualization.
Yep.
I do believe, and that's really what my sister's teaching with these vision boards. It's the same thing. If we see, and it's the same thing Gina has in this sufficiency model. And, you know, if I could just throw one other thing in about Gina's work, having had the great pleasure of attending one of their workshops recently. The text has been kind of, the comment about the taxes threw me a little because I know I understood what you were trying to convey. The message that I really got was that
Roberta, you're fading.
Oh no, I'm fading.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Come back to the light. Yes.
Better? Okay. Sorry. What Gina was saying. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Just speaking of the sufficiency model in reaction to Dan's comment as well, the power of I am, is you taught me, Gina, that if you see the world as abundant in every way, if you see love as abundant, friendship, creativity, money, success, whatever, you know, energy, health, and you view it and you start to really think of it that way. I've been doing the practice that you taught us of the grateful, the gratitude meditation, and it is so helpful, and it's the same thing. So I just wanted to put a point on that and appreciate the teachings and encourage people who haven't. I get your daily sufficiency emails, and I love them.
Thank you. Yeah, I do offer, you know, in the vein of the stories we tell, one of the I ask myself three questions every day, and maybe we'll pause for a moment and I'll ask them now and you can jot down answers for yourselves. But one question I ask myself is, what am I grateful for? And I either write that as a stream of consciousness for 5 minutes, or I just do a bulleted list, or just right before I go to bed, I think of what I'm grateful for. And immediately in gratitude, in my experience, I'm restored to sufficiency instantly. And then the second question I ask is, what am I proud of? And I ask that question because I'm the type of person who is incredibly grateful for the sun and rain and the planet, but I also wanted to get a little deeper into myself, and so I ask, what am I proud of? And then the third question I ask, usually at the end of the day, but at some point in time during the day, is, what am I longing for? And I would just encourage us to pause for a moment and think about what am I grateful for? What am I proud of? Something I've done or who I'm being, and what am I longing for? And I'll use that as a transition to Roberta, and I really wanted it to open up for you all if you had questions for us specifically or for this community or reflections. As we have about 20 more minutes, and we always guarantee you get off on time. So I'll use this moment as a time to shift. Then most of you are off mute, so if you want to talk, just speak up. Roberta, are you willing to share your answers to those three questions?
You always make sure. Yes, I am happy to do that. What am I grateful for? My children, my family, my health, the clean air in the city that I live in Virginia. My sister's healing, and my yoga practice. I have so many things. I have a list of 100 things. So add to that my incredible kids and my family. I would say what I am proud of is that I really jumped off a cliff when I left my television news job, and then I left my job as a professor at Tufts and started this journey in leadership development. And I'm proud of myself for taking that risk and trying to create something completely new. And like Aurora said, some days I'm really killing myself over it, and other days I am very proud. And I am longing for, in addition to world peace, I am longing for two work things. I'm longing for the ability to share these mindfulness practices with clients. I really believe that they're extremely helpful, and this new work that I did with this international company potential project, I think, can open a lot of those doors for people. Because I do think if you can reach people in big organizations and they begin to bring mindfulness practices to work, what we're really teaching is compassion and empathy and love. We just call it executive presence and brain training. We wrap it up in a nice corporate envelope, but we're really talking about love. And the second is that I want to write my stories. I have I'm writing a book, and I'm writing a book about mindful moments in television and life. And I want to finish it this year. So I am longing to see the book done and printed and out there as soon as possible. I need to visualize that.
Thank you. Anyone on the call willing to share their answers to those questions or anything else?
No, we would love to hear from you guys. Come on, people.
Oh, PB, you going to say something?
I'll say something. It's just been wonderful listening to the stories and thinking about story and, you know, being changed by story and changing my story. And there's a lot of really rich, thoughtful, deep things I think I'm going to be thinking about long after this call. And I was very fortunate to get to see B.B. King live in performance.
Ah! Wow, where was
it? It was in Atlanta, Georgia, in a very small, intimate venue where I was really literally a table away from him. That was a memory I treasure. Mm-hmm. As Aurora was talking and as I've been listening, I was also thinking about sometimes how I misuse story. And I have a habit of having conversations and having meetings and having all of these thoughts in my head about possible future events, you know, that I'm going over in my mind, you know, usually around some difficult situation or something. And I have been, one of my personal practices is to stop telling myself these stories, to stop having the meeting before the meeting, to stop having, you know, conversations before they happen, and to try and be present in the actual moment that things unfold. So when I catch myself, I say story, and then I say now, and I take myself out of the story. Because it's a story, I thought back on all the stories I've told myself, and many of them just didn't, you know, just it didn't happen, and it was really kind of a waste of my energy. It took me into emotional places and mental places. I really don't need to go. So I'm really thinking about what stories do I want to tell, and how do I want to change my stories so that my stories can then change me.
Wow.
So I'm just, you know, feeding off this conversation. It's really lovely. Thank you.
Thanks, PB. Thank you. That was really lovely.
Thank you.
Hold on. Sarah Grace, hold on 1 second, though. Don't start talking yet. Sarah Grace.
What a beautiful call. Everything about this. Boy, I'm going to take this with me. And talking of gratitude, I am truly grateful for this call. And I do ongoingly, almost as a daily practice, do a gratitude list and, you know, have friends. And we continue to share with each other what we're grateful for. And, you know, I think that... let me see, the second one was, what am I proud of? I guess what I'm proud of is I keep going no matter what. And what I long for is to let go of so many of the stories I still carry around with me, almost as a mantra and almost as, you know, complete. I mean, I'm aware that it's a mantra. I'm aware that it's just so habitual. But I think, you know, I mean, I long to live a fuller life. I long to feel really alive and vibrant. And I've had health issues for quite a few years and, you know, don't feel like I'm really improving. And so I long for health and I long to have things be different in my life. And so, you know, the stories that I tell myself about my health or about lack of funds or, I mean, you know, those, you know, I'm going to get Dan's book because
yeah.
I long to change that story because I know that it's a killer, you know, it's a slow suicide to have those stories.
Sarah Grace, thank you so much for sharing. Absolutely. Absolutely. Roberta, did you want to say something?
No, I thank you, Sarah, for sharing that. And, you know, I would just encourage you to think about the fact that you have probably twice as many positive stories inside of you. So maybe it's also that the stories aren't, it's not that you want to tell yourself the positive stories, right? Not the ones that are dragging you down. So the stories in themselves aren't bad or aren't a problem and can be enriching. It's that when we tell ourselves our same old story of what we can't do it or we're not good enough or we mess, you know, we're a child of broken home, whatever our story is that we tell ourselves, you know, as Dan said, we become it.
Exactly.
So tell the stories that you love about yourself. Close your eyes and think about, like Gina said, something you're proud of. Something you know, what makes you feel great? What makes you feel healthy? What did you do as a kid that you love? What did you do as a young adult? What, you know, all, let those movies play. You know, that's my thought on that.
Yeah, I do have a couple of really good stories. And when I say those good stories, you know, people get really excited and enthusiastic because I'm excited and enthusiastic. So thank you for the reminder because I think I have more stories. I have more positive stories. And I do want to offer and I do want to say I do a mindfulness practice, and I'm telling you, it has really changed my life. I struggled with the so-called meditation, and when I found mindfulness, it was like everything goes. Everything is right. You know, I no longer was telling myself I wasn't doing it right. So that's a good story.
Mm-hmm.
I love mindfulness.
Yep. Oh, good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sarah Grace. Yeah, that is a great story. I think we have this belief in our society that mindfulness or meditation looks a very specific way, and you have to sit
right.
in a very specific pose, and the pose looks daunting to those of us
right.
who have spent most of our lives in chairs. And
right.
really, mindfulness is to be present in this moment, this breath.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like to say is to notice the process of my mind rather than the content of my mind.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So, Sarah Grace, thank you for that reminder. Anyone else want to raise their hand to ask us questions, to share a reflection? So one of the things I'm committed to is action through practice and really taking this work into our daily lives. And so as we think about the end, as we come toward the end of this call, I have two inquiry questions for you all. As a result of this conversation, this call, what, if anything, will you do differently tomorrow, or who will you be differently tomorrow?
Mm.
And then the second question is, what commitments am I willing to make as a result of this call, either to myself, my family, my community, or my organization? And I'll just dive in to say that for me, I noticed this morning I was a little agitated, and I had not written in my journal in almost 2 weeks, which is unheard of if anyone knows me. And so as preparation for this call, I sat down and wrote in my journal. And so my commitment going forward is to, starting today and tomorrow, is to pick back up my journal practice. Because it really is important to me. So that's what I will say, that it's a direct result of being on this call and preparing for this call.
All right. I will say the same, Gina. So will you hold me accountable?
Absolutely. We can hold each other accountable to that. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I just appreciate everyone's feedback, too. I mean, I think that we've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah. Anyone want to share one commitment before we move toward the final minutes of the call?
Yeah, this is Aurora. My commitment is to be to rejoin this movement and be in the call. Thank you.
Thank you, Aurora.
Yay!
Yay!
Yay, Aurora!
So, let me tell you a little bit about this movement, what's available for you all. We've been experimenting with the community calls, and so I would ask if you all have deep requests, thinking about these calls and what you would like to hear on them or how you would like them to be, we would love to hear them, and you can email that to us at info@sevenstonesleadership.com. You should also know that as a participant, you will receive the recording of this call, and then I will put in links to all of the references we've made to books and the B.B. King story. I also wanted to let you know, for those of you who are on the phone who are coaches or trusted advisors and you're in that line of work, we have an advanced training for coaches and trusted advisors, and it's been a 9-month course, but each module is available for to participate. And the next one is June 11th and 12th. It is in Ashland, Massachusetts, and the next topic is on ontology, language as the primary currency of leaders, and I assure you we will be talking a lot about the stories that we tell as coaches, as advisors, and the stories we tell as leaders. If you're interested, in finding more about that, it's on our homepage, and I will include a link in the follow-up email. And then on September 17th and 18th, at the same location in Ashland, Massachusetts, the last and final subject will be Games Worth Playing, Using Game Theory to Design Strategy and Create High-Leverage Leaders. On October 2nd, the course that Roberta joined us for is, we're having it again. We're calling it Cultivating the Heart of Leadership, and it really is to, it's a blend of mindfulness practice and somatic movement to open our hearts and cultivate love for ourselves in as leaders and in our work, and that's also in Ashland, Massachusetts on October 2nd. In January of 2016, Jen and I will be offering a four-day opportunity, and you can come and join us at the Shivananda Ashram and Yoga Retreat Center in the Bahamas on Paradise Island. So anyone interested in coming to the Bahamas, it's January 22nd through 25th. We have information on our website, and the registration isn't open until July with Shivananda, but we have an ability for you to hold your seat on our website, and you'll see the link there. And then finally, which is it's last and certainly not least, Jen and I have been wanting for a very long time to do this. We are going to have a two-day in-person retreat for experiencing sustainable abundance, deepening your journey into enoughness. And to for those of you who want to bring this conversation and this commitment to sufficiency to a larger world, we're going to have you for 2 days in Ashland, Massachusetts on March 3rd and 4th. And we are, it's an application process, and applications are welcome at any time. So those are our upcoming offerings, which is a lot. And right now I'm talking to the people at Wisdom 2.0 Business to speak at that event in New York.
Ah.
We haven't confirmed anything yet, but that's on my docket, and I have 3 things kind of in the works, and we will always keep you posted when we travel and speak around the country. So thank you all. I thought I would end with a poem, because why not? And I want to thank you, Roberta. Do you want to say any final things before I read the poem?
No, just a thank you for inviting me, and it's been a great pleasure to be a part of this conversation. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. This poem is, I will not die an unlived life.
Oh, yeah.
I will not die an unlived life. I will not live in fear of falling or catching fire. I choose to inhabit my days, to allow my living to open me, to make me less afraid, more accessible, to loosen my heart until it becomes a wing, a torch, a promise. I choose to risk my significance, to live so that which came to me as seed goes to the next as blossom, and that which came to me as blossom goes on as fruit. Thank you all. Have a wonderful, wonderful day and weekend, and in touch.
Thank you, Gina.
You're welcome, Roberta.
Thank you. Goodbye.